Sir, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. There are reports that hundreds of rebels are preparing an offensive to seize control of the Syrian town of Jarablus, now under control of the Islamic group. Turkey, which has been shelling the border town, vowed Tuesday to give full support to efforts to free it from ISIS forces. Dorian Jones reports on increased tensions in the area.
Since Monday, Turkish artillery has been shelling Islamic State forces in the Syrian border town of Jarablus. Jarablus is a key supply route for IS, the last remaining town under its control on the Turkish border. Turkey has been massing tanks on the Syrian border to offer support ahead of a widely predicted offensive to capture Jarablus by the Turkish-backed Syrian Free Army forces. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
A strong earthquake shook central Italy early Wednesday, causing extensive damage to areas near the epicenter and killing at least three people. The U.S. Geological Survey put the magnitude at 6.2, with the epicenter about 10 kilometers southeast of the town of Norcia. The quake was felt across a broad section of central Italy, including the capital, Rome, where people in homes in the historic center felt a long swaying followed by aftershocks. Authorities in Thailand said Wednesday that a bomb exploded near a hotel in the urgency insurgency racked region in the south, killing one employee and wounding 29 people. Second blast Tuesday in the popular tourist town of Pattani resulted only in property damage. Muslim separatists have waged an insurgency in the area for more than a decade in the Buddhist-majority country. This is VOA News. France and Germany are calling on the European Union to adopt common rules to limit messaging, encryption, or codes on social media in the battle against terrorism. Lisa Bryan has more on a meeting of French and German interior ministers in Paris.
French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve said France and Germany do not want to ban encrypted messaging, but rather to work with social media groups to limit its use by Islamist radicals. Speaking alongside his German counterpart, Cazeneuve said European intelligence services and magistrates should be able to identify coded messages used by extremists through applications like Telegram and WhatsApp and use them as evidence against perpetrators. The two countries want European Union member states to discuss common legislation at a meeting next month. Lisa Bryant, Paris.
South Sudan's opposition leader Riek Machar is said to be getting medical treatment in Sudan. Sudan's information minister told VOA Tuesday that the opposition leader was brought to Sudan in serious condition, suffering from some sort of chest infection and a problem with his leg. Machar went into hiding last month after fighting broke out in the capital Juba between forces loyal to Machar and those backing his rival, South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. Officials say 2 days of fighting between the al-Shabaab militant group and the regional forces in the southwestern Somali area have left at least 15 people dead. The fighting took place outside Mora Gabi village in the Bakool region. Forces of the Bakool government and surrounding regions have recently stepped up military operations to open roads blocked by al-Shabaab. U.S. authorities are investigating Russian cyber attacks targeting information collected by journalists at the New York Times and other news organizations. U.S. authorities say the cyber attacks may be an attempt to gain an understanding of the current American political scene and leading up to the November 8th presidential election. Information collected by key journalists could provide links to their sources or offer hints about possible unpublished stories related to Russia. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has abandoned his call to deport all 11 million illegal aliens, or rather immigrants, living in the United States. Instead, Trump says he will send convicted criminals to their home countries and handle other immigration residency disputes, much the way the country does now, but with greater urgency. Trump says he is not flip-flopping on the deportation issue and has not ended his vow to build a wall along the country's southern border. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington. Join us for more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's former rebel leader and first vice president is in neighboring Sudan in need of urgent medical attention.
He arrived maybe 2 days ago and he's very sick and he's under treatment. He has a chest infection and he's in a very bad condition.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. Preliminary election talks have started in the DRC with fewer opposition parties participating. Liberia's Supreme Court refuses to get involved in a House of Representatives leadership dispute. And Zambia's opposition UPND denies its supporters are engaged in ethnic cleansing.
The violence that is there is basically political rivalry between the opposition and the ruling party. So it cannot be said to be widespread or even targeted as ethnic cleansing.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's opposition UPND party. A Zimbabwe lawmaker pushes ahead for an end to police brutality against peaceful demonstrators. And cancellation of a mass wedding in northern Nigeria leaves many couples unhappy. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Authorities in neighboring Sudan say South Sudan's former rebel leader and first vice president Riek Machar is in the hospital in Khartoum. Sudan's information minister and government spokesman Ahmed Bilal says Machar was brought to Khartoum under what he calls serious medical condition. Bilal declined to give further details about Machar's health. Machar fled Juba last month following clashes between government and rebel forces. His whereabouts had been unknown until he was discovered by UN forces near the Democratic Republic of Congo's border. Information Minister Bilal says Machar will remain in Khartoum until his condition improves.
Actually, he arrived maybe 2 days ago and he's very sick and he's under treatment. And this is the arrangement. He came from a neighboring country to Sudan, and he has under treatment. And if he wants to go outside for more investigation and treatment, he is free to do that. And if he stayed in our hospitals, we are going to treat him. And we informed our brothers in the south that in this occasion.
Did you manage to see him physically and assess his medical condition?
I'm the spokesman. I'm telling you the truth. I have announced that, and this is the truth. He is here in Sudan, and he is under treatment.
What is his health problem?
The problems in his leg and chest. He has chest infection, and his leg is a very bad condition because he kept walking for more than 15 days.
And what are hospital authorities telling you since you have been in touch with the medical experts in Sudan?
I'm telling you as a spokesman. I'm telling you as a spokesman. My government is treating him under this. Not the hospital to tell you. I'm telling you myself. He's under treatment, and we hope that his condition improves.
And how many other people came with him to Sudan for this medical treatment?
He's alone.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking from Khartoum with John Tanza of VOA's Sudan in Focus program. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on Tuesday announced the appointment of retired Major General Patrick Kamau of the Netherlands to lead an independent special investigation into the violence in South Sudan's capital last July and the response of the UN mission in South Sudan known as AMIS. The investigation will review reports of incidents of attacks on civilians and cases of sexual violence that occur within or in the vicinity of the UN civilian protection sites in Juba. Elsewhere in Africa, the U.S. Treasury has imposed financial sanctions against two sons of Joseph Kony, the leader of the Lowest Resistance Army, LRA, a rebel group fighting a bloody war in Central Africa. The Treasury Department on Tuesday froze all assets in the United States belonging to Salim and Ali Kony and prohibiting Americans from doing any business with them. Zambia's opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, is denying that its supporters in the opposition stronghold of the country's southern province are engaged in ethnic cleansing against supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party. This follows the country's August 11 presidential election, in which incumbent Edgar Lungu was declared the winner. One report says over 250 people were displaced after their houses were burned down by suspected UPND supporters. Another account says the Tonga ethnic group who support UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema have targeted the Ogoni and Bemba-speaking people from eastern and northern provinces because they support President Lungu. But UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma says allegations of ethnic cleansing are a ruling party propaganda. He says the violence is actually political rivalry between the ruling party and the opposition that has nothing to do with inter-tribal fighting.
The area being referred to is a vast area, that is southern province, and the reported incidents, an isolated one, is happening in one constituency out of 19 that are in the region. So it cannot be said to be widespread or even targeted as ethnic cleansing. The violence that is there is basically political rivalry between the opposition and the ruling party, and nothing to do with tribes. Those instances of political violence are not just happening in Namwala, in southern province, but also here in the capital city, Lusaka. There are also instances of political violence. This time it's the other way around. It's a ruling party that is going into the markets and burning down and bringing down market stores for the opposition traders. It is just political rivalry rather than ethnic cleansing.
Are you suggesting that supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front of President Lungu are also involved in violence against supporters of the UPND?
Correct. And that is happening right up here in the capital city, Lusaka.
Now, Mr. Kakoma, what happens now? Your party, have you filed the appeal in the court against the election results? Have you done that?
Yes, we filed the election petition on Friday last week. And today the case was on. Even yesterday it was on. But we made the preliminary applications to, one, compel the president to step aside in order to allow the speaker of the National Assembly to act as president as provided for under the Constitution. So far, he's been resisting to step aside. So we've applied to the Constitutional Court to compel him to step aside. And secondly, we've applied that all the election materials must be in the custody of the court so that the Electoral Commission does not interfere, or the government does not interfere or change figures of the election results.
What do you make of the latest news that the Independent Broadcasting Authority of Zambia on Tuesday shut down two radio stations and Zambia's biggest private television station?
Well, that is terrible. It's a setback in the fight for press freedom in Zambia, and it is a setback for our young democracy. It is denying the people access to information so that they have informed choices. There is absolutely nothing wrong that they did. In any case, if they did anything wrong, the law provides that in the interest of national justice, they should have been written to so that they defend themselves or exculpate themselves. But nothing of that happened. They just received an illegal suspension of their licenses. That, of course, for us, we're interpreting it as a preparation to not only muzzle the press, but to black out the opposition completely, because they also did that to the largest private newspaper, the Post newspaper. They also closed it a few months ago. Now they're closing also the television and radio stations that are covering the opposition.
The Independent Broadcasting Board said that the action was necessary because of the unprofessional conduct in which the three broadcasting stations conducted themselves.
That is unbelievable, because the unprofessional conduct is coming from the national broadcaster, the Zambia National Broadcasting Corporation. If anybody was to blame the Independent Broadcasting Authority, they should have taken action also against the public broadcaster who are blacked out in opposition and only carry stories for the ruling party.
What do you expect to be the result from the Constitutional Court about your challenge to the election results? Do you expect a positive result?
The evidence we have gathered is solid, and so our confidence is in the evidence that we have gathered. And it is going to be a big test for our newly constituted constitutional court. But we believe that facts they cannot be changed. If they gave President Lungu wrong figures, which the Electoral Commission has itself started already correcting on their own before even the court orders, it means that those figures were irregularly given to President Lungu to assist him to win.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the opposition UPND Party of Zambia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Today's Wednesday, August 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Preliminary talks on elections got underway in the Democratic Republic of Congo on Tuesday amid continued tension over slow preparations for the poll. And what the opposition says are attempts by President Joseph Kabila to cling to power. Most opposition parties are not taking part in the so-called dialogue. Nick Long files from Goma, where opposition supporters demonstrated on Tuesday.
There are about 50 participants at these talks, including some opposition politicians, as well as ruling coalition and civil society representatives. The dialogue facilitator, Togo's former Prime Minister Edem Kodjo, released a list of opposition parties taking part, most of them small. The bulk of the biggest opposition party, the UDPS, and the other parties in the main opposition bloc, known as the Rassemblement, were not represented at the talks Tuesday. Lawmaker Juvenal Manubo of the UNC, one of the parties that is taking part in the dialogue, told VOA there needs to be more of the opposition on board if the talks are to make progress. He says we must not think that everything is in place and we can now discuss the main points without trying to get the others involved. He adds the other parties continually need to be invited, and the best way to do that is through acts such as freeing political prisoners, which he says would contribute enormously, and abandoning the lawsuit against Moise Katumbi. That would also help. The government announced the release of 26 political prisoners last week, but the opposition says most of them had already been released weeks or months ago. Moise Katumbi's bid to be an opposition candidate for the presidency is currently blocked by a lawsuit. Manubo suggested some participants in the talks want to reach an agreement quickly. There's no fixed duration for the dialogue, he says, but certain people say it should not last more than 3 or 4 weeks, because everyone is aware that September the 20th, which is supposed to be the day for calling the elections, is very close. Under the Constitution, President Joseph Kabila's second and final term ends in December, but the Electoral Commission has said it could take more than a year to prepare for elections. An opposition party, ACIDE, was campaigning Tuesday in Goma for the constitution to be respected. Party activist Christian Badoz handed out red biros to passers-by to symbolise what he called the need to correct the work of the Electoral Commission. Badoz says Congolese must respect the constitution approved by popular vote. He says 6 million Congolese died before that vote could be held, and it would be shameful to abandon the constitution. He was referring to a widely quoted figure for the number of people who died as a result of Congo's recent wars. That figure is contested, but no one denies there was huge loss of life. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Liberia's Supreme Court on Tuesday refused to rule on a petition filed by Mbatho Speaker of the House of Representatives Alex Tyler to prohibit rebel lawmakers from holding parallel sessions. About 40 of the 73 members of the House want the Speaker to recuse himself from presiding over the House business until his criminal indictment for alleged bribery is resolved. As Titi Jibro reports from Monrovia, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has reaffirmed her commitment to work with the anti-Tyler lawmakers.
There are options under the law. I'm not going to succumb to threats or pressure in what they're doing. That's why I'm going about my business.
A defiant, embattled House Speaker Alex Tyler challenging those wanting to remove him, saying he's going nowhere, squarely relying on what he calls the organic laws of the country. Earlier on, Justice in Chambers James Etta Howard Wolokoli declined to issue the writ of prohibition prayed for by Speaker Tyler. Critics described the inaction as a recipe for more chaos. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who has continuously been accused by Speaker Tyler of instigating his removal, resubmitted her earlier support for the renegade lawmakers.
Cognizant of the reminder in the letter of the president as resubmitted by the reading of the ruling from the Supreme Court, the issue of constitutionality and legitimacy have been settled. And with these hindrances behind us, it is incumbent upon us to henceforth carry on the work for which we were statutorily elected.
Rebel lawmaker Edward Ford says he's optimistic the anti-Speaker Tyler forces are doing the right thing. Meanwhile, the Liberian Senate continues to do business only with supporters of Speaker Tyler. The senators fear that not doing business with the Speaker would set a wrong precedent. The standard-bearer of the main opposition Congress for Democratic Change and Manseratu County Senator George Weah, speaking Tuesday for the first time, cautioned his colleagues to follow the due process of law.
We need to make sure that we understand what we're doing. Tomorrow, if we set a precedent, someone will come and accuse anybody, and they have to be out unconstitutionally. So we must follow the law. There's law that governs the country. So the due process is the best way.
Speaker Tyler has said he will not recuse himself from conducting his official duties while his corruption case continues in court. On the other hand, those seeking his recusal, backed by President Sirleaf, say they will continue to demand his recusal. For VOA News, I'm Titi Jibro, reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
Zimbabwe Member of Parliament Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDCT says he will continue pushing a motion calling on the police to stop brutalizing peaceful protesters despite move by ZANU-PF lawmakers to walk out of Parliament. Chamisa's move was sparked by alleged police brutality on some Zimbabweans who staged recent nationwide protests against the deteriorating social and economic conditions in the country. This was the second time that ZANU-PF members have walked out of parliament against the police brutality motion. Chamisa tells reporter Marvelous Nyahuye of VOA Studio 7 Zimbabwe program that his motion was aimed at stopping what he calls the onslaught against citizens.
It has become a tradition characteristic of our colleagues in ZANU-PF when they want to avoid a particular motion or some debate because they do not have issues, because they do not have legs to stand on, because they do not have a basis to defend certain indefensible acts. They just want to bury their head in the sand like an ostrich. But we are clearly insisting that in as much as we could not have quorum this day today, we are going to insist and subsist as part of our struggle that the matter be debated, the matter be ventilated, the matter be resolved upon by Parliament. Well, there are certain fundamentals that are supposed to be dealt with, particularly putting in place legislative mechanisms, putting in place administrative mechanisms, and also putting in place oversight parliamentary mechanisms to make sure that will bring to account the minister, the commissioner general of the police, and the police in general as part of our oversight role in terms of the constitution, section 119 of the constitution of Zimbabwe.
So what is the way forward? Are you going to bring this motion up again in the next session?
We will not tire. We are so determined. Persistence is the first chapter in the book of success and victory.
What is the end result that you'd like to see as the opposition party in Zimbabwe?
The end result we'd want to see, not just as the Party of Excellence, the Movement for Democratic Change, but as a people and as leaders in a country, is to make sure that we respect the constitution of our country. The land has got laws. Laws have to be upheld, have to be respected. We want the law to be put in place so that we are able to bring those culprits to book. We have no reason to believe that our genuine police officers who are supposed to be for the people, for the law, and for the country would do such a thing. It must be some urgent provocateurs or people who are being imported from elsewhere in police uniform to come and bastardize, criminalize, and also just put in jeopardy and in bad standing the image of our police. And this is what we want to stop, by making sure that there is an investigation into who deployed these people, where were they deployed, who they deployed, and for what reason, and who are these people. This must be the duty of Parliament, and we're simply performing our duty. Mind you, we are paid by the taxpayers. So we simply have to make sure that we make good what the taxpayers send us to do.
That was Zimbabwe lawmaker Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDCT. He was speaking with Marvelous Nyahuyi of VOA's Studio 7 Zimbabwe program. A mass wedding planned for last weekend in Nigeria and cancelled at the last minute has left about 100 couples sad, disappointed, or possibly relieved. More than 4,000 women have participated in the mass wedding program since it was introduced in 2012 to curb high rates of divorce and prostitution in Nigeria's northern Kano state. Chika Udwa reports from Kano.
22-year-old Inua Inua and 16-year-old Yashia Yunusa were scheduled to be married last Saturday, but the event was cancelled. I am really worried, along with my family and friends. I had already invited my friends, and many of them have come from far away places, only to come to Kano and hear that the wedding will not be taking place any longer. About 100 couples were supposed to get married in the city of Kano in a single ceremony organized by a state senator. But political tensions between the state governor and the senator resulted in the event being indefinitely postponed. More than 4,000 women have gotten married in the mass wedding program in the past 4 years. The government pays all the wedding costs, the venue, traditional bridal gifts, the dowry, food for the guest, furniture for the matrimonial home, and even some starter cash for the couple are taken care of. Abubakar Jidere, a political scientist, explains why he believes the mass wedding program is beneficial.
I think it is essentially meant to promote gender equity in terms of providing sustainable lifestyle for the women.
A sustainable lifestyle basically means getting married and staying married, but many divorce.
It's becoming a real societal problem, because in a predominantly Muslim society, women are not left like that. From the beginning to the end of women, they're supposed to be under a guidance or a protection.
Nigeria's population boom has strained the economy, so many families pressure their daughters into earlier marriage, but many newlyweds find they are incompatible. In Kano State, there are divorced women as young as 14 or 15. Many people are alarmed by the apparent rise in the divorce rate. Zubaydah Naji, a woman's activist, explains.
It's high, that I know. And that is causing women a lot of problems. It is. Because a girl gets married, in the next 3 months, it's finished. It's all over.
The mass wedding program makes it difficult for couples to get divorced. They must bring marital disputes to Sharia police, and a man married in the program must pay a fine of more than $600 to divorce. Meanwhile, government officials say prostitution is rising in Kano. Their solution is to make sure divorced women remarry. Naji believes the real problem is a lack of education and poverty.
There are better ways of taking care of women. For the government to come up with mass weddings, it's only a short-term solution to the problem. And you are creating more problems to the women, because they are going to have babies and they will be more in number, as they are now having more mouth to feed and they have no means of livelihood. Women who jump up at this opportunity are the women who are desperate.
Yashia and Inua admit they were desperate. Yashia is the sixth of 10 children and did not finish primary school.
That was reporter Chika Odua in Kano, Nigeria. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.